This is Chris. Chris is going to talk about a really hot issue, which all of you know. So please welcome him for his talk about backdoors, government hacking, and the next crypto wars.
Can I get the display? There we go. Let's see. I'm beginning. Sorry, I'm using Windows within Linux, so it's always a little bit complex. There we go. Hi, everyone. So thank you all for coming and coming to this room. So my name is Chris Segoyan. I work for the American Civil Liberties Union. I'm a technologist, and I'm embedded within a team of attorneys. I work for a bunch of lawyers who sue the US government for various surveillance practices. It's a very, very fun job. And I actually say, as much as I love the EFF, we were actually the first ones to sue over the latest surveillance program. We sued less than a week after Snowden's first revelations, and we have a lot more fun stuff coming. All right, so today I'm going to tell you a few stories. This is really about this is a history lesson. This is a history lesson and a story about today. Really, what I'm going to explain is how the US government is adapting to changes in technology. How the US government is dealing with a transition from one industry to another, and the final eventual embrace of some basic security technologies. So this is Louis Free. Louis Free was the director of the FBI during most of the 90s. And Louis Free testified several times before the US Congress complaining about the kind of technology that is near and dear to our hearts, encryption technology. So many of you may not remember, but for some period of time, for several years, for decades, cryptographic technology was regulated for under export control rules. You were not permitted to export strong encryption from the United States. And so we had a system of good encryption for the Americans and shitty encryption for everyone else. Not only did we have that system in place, but the FBI and their friends also wanted to push for what was called cryptographic escrow or escrow systems that would allow the government to get information about the encryption keys used by US citizens. And so Louis Free was testifying before Congress in 1997. He said, quote, "The widespread use of robust non-key recovery encryption ultimately will devastate our ability to fight crime and prevent terrorism." He added, "Uncrackable encryption will allow drug lords, spies, terrorists, and even violent gangs to communicate about their crimes and their conspiracies with impunity." The way that Free portrayed encryption to Congress and to policymakers at that point, encryption was the devil's technology. Encryption was something that would allow really horrible things to happen. And so obviously policymakers took note. This was a very scary technology. And what he described would be a world in which the government would be blind. The government would be unable to go after the worst of the worst. And so what Free called for, he said, quote, "The only acceptable answer is socially responsible encryption products, which permit timely law enforcement and national security access and decryption pursuant to court order or otherwise authorized by law." Socially responsible cryptography, in the mind of the FBI, was cryptography that didn't actually keep your information safe from the US government. This is, in fact, one version of that socially responsible crypto. This was called the Clipper chip. And the Clipper chip, thankfully, was not a success in the market. Not only was it not a commercial success, but it wasn't even very secure. The idea was that a third party, potentially the government or someone else, would keep a copy of your private keys. And if you were later suspected of doing something bad, the government could go to that third party, obtain your keys, and then listen to your telephone calls. And thankfully, the Clipper chip never took off. And the FBI's dreams of a world of escrowed encryption, they didn't materialize. A few years later, the export control rules that we had in the United States were lessened. In 1996, Bill Clinton signed an executive order that really got the ball rolling. And in the years that followed, we finally start to saw a sane crypto export control policy. This led, for example, to the United States granting a license to the PGP Corporation to export pretty good privacy. And it's been, you know, this happened in 1996. It's been nearly 20 years since these rules were relaxed. And the doomsday scenario that Free predicted hasn't happened. We haven't had drug dealers and pedophiles and terrorists using encryption en masse. We haven't seen wiretaps and other forms of investigation frustrated by encryption. And so what happened? Why didn't the prediction of Louis Free and his colleagues come true? Why didn't the bad guys suddenly start using encryption? Because it was freely available. Anyone today can go to a number of websites and download email encryption software, hard disk encryption software, and encrypt everything they're doing, but it hasn't happened. PGP has not, in fact, been a problem for the FBI. And the reason is actually not a political one. It is a technical one, or one involving human beings. This is a research paper more than 13 years old now by Alma Witten, which was the first usability study of PGP. And the idea was to examine how regular people used encryption software and to figure out whether regular people could figure out how to use the encryption software. This is what PGP looked like in 1998 when the study was published. And in fact, the user interface for PGP hasn't really changed that much since. And so Alma described these really horrific situations. I mean, horrific from the perspective of someone in the security field. She described situations in which people thought that they were encrypting when they were in fact not encrypting, or people sending their private keys instead of sending their public keys. And you know, you can crack jokes and say, aha, the users are so stupid, but actually this is a failure of the engineering community. This is a failure of our community to produce tools that are easy enough for regular people to use. And things haven't changed. You know, Glenn Greenwald tried to use PGP, failed to use PGP. Edward Snowden made a how-to video, and that still didn't help. And eventually, someone had to help Greenwald out. And that's not to blame Glenn. I think Glenn's skills are probably about average for a national security journalist. It's just these tools are really difficult to use. And we as a community haven't done enough. But this is what has benefited the FBI. It has been the massive usability problems associated with encryption, and the fact that you have to go and download something, the fact that you have to take affirmative steps to get encryption software means that most people won't in fact use it. And so the FBI has been able to take advantage of this. As long as people are using the default tools and the default settings, the FBI wins when those defaults are not safe or secure. And so although PGP hasn't been a problem, neither has HTTPS. The encryption that we use in our web browsers for years has not been widely used. This is one of the slides that was released by, I think this one was released by The Guardian this summer. This is a GCHQ slide from 2009 saying, why is GCHQ interested in HTTP? And the answer was because at that point, in 2009, nearly everything a user does was using HTTP. Back in 2009, just 4 years ago, Facebook, Yahoo, Twitter, MySpace, Gmail, Google Earth, Wikipedia, everything was going over the internet in clear text. Although SSL was available in the browser, consumers don't choose whether or not the sites they're visiting are going to be, whether they will be going over SSL or not. That is generally a decision made by the server, particularly if the server doesn't even support it. And so governments took advantage of this. They could engage in massive passive interception enabled because of the fact that encryption wasn't being used. Now, of course, that was in 2009. We're now in 2013, and a lot has changed in the last few years. Hell, a lot has changed in the last few months. And so Google was the first of the big tech companies, first of the big non-financial companies to finally roll out SSL by default in January of 2010. And in the next couple of years, several companies followed. Twitter, Microsoft's Outlook email service, Facebook, and then Google even moved their search service to SSL by default. And so we've gone in the past few years from a world in which most information, most of our communications were going over the public internet in unencrypted form to a world in which some of our communications are going over the web in encrypted form, at least in portions of the internet. Even Yahoo has announced that they are allegedly committed to protecting your information and are finally turning on SSL, I think, what, in a few weeks. In January, they're gonna be doing this. Now, if you, some of this has in fact been a direct result of reporting by the Washington Post, not only revealing that these companies' information, the information between the users and the sites was being intercepted, but in fact the information between the data centers of various companies, the internal links between companies were being intercepted. And so it was directly as a result of the reporting of the Washington Post that Yahoo finally got with the program and turned on SSL by default, that Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft have announced that they are all encrypting their server-to-server links. And so we're finally getting to a point where things are getting a little bit better. If you've seen the EFF Encrypt the Web report, which is a fantastic compendium of information, this sea of green that we're now seeing across tech companies is directly a result of the disclosures of this summer. And so we're finally moving in the right direction. And of course, the government probably isn't gonna like this too much. I mean, it will frustrate some forms of passive surveillance, passive network surveillance. But HTTPS does not prevent the US government from getting data. HTTPS prevents the US government from getting data from the companies that they would normally like to get it from, but it doesn't actually stop them from getting your data or my data. Right, so typically, the US government would like to go to operators of backbone internet services. It was revealed by the New York Times that Level 3 Communications provides the links between Google's data centers. We know that Verizon and AT&T have been providing assistance to the US government for a long time. And so the government would rather go to these telcos. They would rather go to these companies and get information in bulk. Right? They can do keyword searches through people's email accounts and other forms of information when they get everything at once. They would rather do this than go to the tech companies and request information. And so the shift from HTTP to HTTPS is also causing a shift in the way that the government obtains information about users. And the way that this shift is occurring is that they now have to go to Silicon Valley technology companies, whereas in the past, they could go to friendly telecommunications companies who were probably more likely to say yes and to give them access to far more information at once. Right? And so what we've seen then, naturally, is the development of relationships between the Silicon Valley technology companies and the NSA. Now, Prism, I think in some ways, people have gotten the wrong impression about this. These companies have been providing access to the US government long before they were listed on the Prism slides. All US technology companies are required by law to respond to lawful requests. And the Prism really is just about how are these requests processed and how is the information delivered to the government. But let's be sure, let's be clear, Google will respond to lawful requests from the Department of Justice. Facebook, Microsoft, Yahoo, all of these companies are required by law and will hand over data about their customers. What's happened though, what SSL or the use of transport encryption has done is it has moved the point of interception and has moved the bottleneck to the technology companies. The technology companies want to be the one place through which the government can spy on their users. They've not said that they want to be, or that they want their users to be safe from all spying. They just want to be the ones to perform the spying. They want to know when the government wants information about one of their users. They want to be the ones who receive the court order, who examine the court order, maybe who push back or don't push back. What they don't want is some other company, like a telecommunications company, to be the one providing data about their customers. And so I think it's important to understand and to take note of the fact that the tech companies still have your data in unencrypted form. Right? Even though the communications are going over the internet in encrypted form, once it gets to Google, once your emails get to Google servers, once your direct messages on Twitter get to Twitter, they're sitting there in unencrypted form or at least encrypted form that their engineers can access when they need to. And that's not gonna change anytime soon. It's unlikely that the major technology companies are gonna roll out products that protect your information in such a way that they are never able to hand your information over to the government when they get a request. This is Vint Cerf. Many of you, I'm sure everyone in this room has heard of him, one of the fathers of the internet. Vint is now a senior executive at Google. I think his title is Internet Evangelist. And Vint was on a panel with me in 2011, and we were discussing whether Google could ever sort of deliver secure services to their customers. And he said, quote, "We couldn't run our system if everything in it were encrypted, because then we wouldn't know which ads to show you. This is a system that was designed around a particular business model." And I have to give Vint, you know, a lot of respect for being this open and this transparent. It's something, in fact, that many of his colleagues haven't done. But Google cannot deliver a service to you right now where Google is never going to be able to hand over your information to the government without shifting to a different business model. Google's advertising-supported business model requires that they see the contents of your emails. It requires that they know the web pages you're going to. And to move to a model where they don't know the contents of your emails, where they don't know where you're going on the web, and where they know nothing about you, will require that they give up the advertising revenue that they make right now. And many of us don't give our money to Google. I'm not going to get into this business about if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. But right now, Google would have to switch to an entirely different business model to deliver end-to-end encrypted services to users. And it's not clear that they want to move down that path. I think they want to stay a very successful advertising company. So the first thing is that Google's business model doesn't actually permit them to move to a situation in which they have only encrypted data. And the second thing is that it's not even clear whether the tech companies want to provide services that keep the government out. It seems, if you listen to the executives at the big tech companies, it seems like they're actually okay with individualized surveillance. You know, they're okay with moving from a world where we are now to a world in which the government can only get information about individual users. If you listen to the statements of the executives or you see some of the things they've put out, for example, just a week or two ago, eight of the biggest technology companies published this this open call to reform government surveillance. You can see it online at, I think it's reformgovernmentsurveillance.com. And they've called for the US government and governments around the world to sort of reform their surveillance practices and laws. One of the things they say in that is that governments should limit surveillance to specific known users for lawful purposes and should not undertake bulk collection of internet communications. So on one hand, I guess we should be happy that these companies have come to our aid and are deploying their PR and lobbying dollars in favor of surveillance reform. They clearly don't like dragnet surveillance. They don't want governments to get information about all of their users, but they do seem to be comfortable with individualized requests about particular users. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you're comfortable with the police having access to your information if they go to a judge and they obtain and then, you know, they show probable cause and then they get the emails. I don't particularly want my emails to be turned over under any circumstances. And Google and these other technology companies are not going to deliver the kind of encryption and privacy protections that I actually want. And that's fine. There are companies and they can choose to target their products in the market the way that they choose to do. But let's be clear. Google and Facebook and Microsoft are not about to start delivering end-to-end encrypted services to their users. They are not ready to lock the government out. So this is Eric Schmidt, of course, Google's longtime CEO and now chairman. And in 2009, Eric Schmidt was interviewed by public radio in the United States, and he was asked about surveillance. He said, he was asked about why Google keeps data about users. He said, quote, "The reason we keep search engine data for any length of time is, one, we need to make our algorithms better, but more importantly, there is a legitimate case of the government, or particularly the police function or so forth, wanting, with a federal subpoena and so forth, being able to get access to that information." So this is not the most articulate statement that Schmidt has ever made, but what is clear is that he was justifying their data retention under the grounds that it would be useful to the police. Again, it's fine that Google wants to do that. I wish they would be a little bit more transparent about that. But Google is keeping your data, according to Eric Schmidt, because it is useful to the authorities. And I don't want my email provider to have that policy. And if you want your email provider to not keep your data, then Google probably isn't going to be the right company for you either. So the government, my government, has been concerned for years about the spread of encryption. They've been concerned about the spread of easy-to-use tools. And slowly, we are starting to get some form of encryption delivered to consumers and enabled by default. It's not keeping the government out, but it is limiting their ability to conduct bulk surveillance. And in some cases, sophisticated users who are using end-to-end encrypted services may, in fact, cause the government to not be able to perform intercepts. The FBI has a term for this. They have a term for this problem of not being able to spy on users anymore. They call it going dark. This is something they've been predicting for more than a decade. This is Valerie Caproni. She was, for a long, long time, the general counsel for the FBI, the FBI's top lawyer. Just in the last year or two, she left the FBI and is now a federal judge in New York. And so Valerie Caproni went to Congress to complain about this going dark problem. She complained about the world that the FBI was facing and the threat of these encryption technologies. She said, quote, "The FBI and other government agencies are facing a potentially widening gap between our legal authority to intercept electronic communications and our practical ability to actually intercept those communications." What she's saying here is that they can get an order from a judge to intercept someone's information, to tap a phone or to tap an instant message conversation. But once they have that court order, they're not actually able in all circumstances to actually tap the connection. Maybe the person is using some form of encrypted voice over IP or encrypted real-time text messaging. But she's saying that they get the court orders but then cannot actually do the taps. And the solution that the FBI called for, the solution that the law enforcement community proposed, were legal backdoors. So what they wanted to do was to get expanded powers from Congress to be able to go to technology companies, to major technology companies, and force them to build in law enforcement interception interfaces into their products. These are the same kinds of interception features that the telecommunications companies already have. In the US, we have a law called CALEA, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, and really what they wanted to do was to expand that to companies like Google and Facebook and Microsoft. Now, as recently as April 28th of this year, just before May, the FBI was ready. They had a proposal ready to go that would, if passed by Congress, would have given the FBI the authority to fine technology companies if they refused to provide this kind of surveillance assistance. Allegedly, the president was even getting close to signing onto it. And then something happened. Something happened that slightly disrupted their plans. This gentleman reached out to journalists and provided some documents. And thankfully, it seems like the proposals to make life easier for wiretappers are dead in the water. It seems like right now there isn't very much appetite in Washington, D.C. for legislation that would make surveillance easier. But it probably won't stay that way forever. At some point, the FBI and their friends are going to come back to Congress, and the winds will change, and they will say, we need new powers. We need powers to add surveillance features to our networks. Of course, many of you in the past few months have heard about the NSA's role in cooperating with technology companies, and we learned even last 2 or 3 weeks about RSA getting $10 million to switch to a problematic random number generator. But these covert backdoors that the NSA has been able to get, they're not actually very useful for the law enforcement community. So what the needs of the NSA are very different from the needs of law enforcement for the simple reason that the stuff that the NSA does doesn't end up in court documents. Things that law enforcement do end up in court papers, and so any secret backdoor will be revealed to the public when someone is arrested and prosecuted in court. And so any backdoor that depends on secrecy is no good for the police. They don't want to spend $10 million convincing RSA to do something, and then it comes out in court a month later, and then that money's wasted, right? So they need backdoors that are not secret. And the way that you get backdoors that are not secret is through legislation. And so at some point, what we're likely going to see are government officials providing or trying to provide powers that allow law enforcement agencies to access information in the same way that the NSA can already get information. I mean, many people will think that like the government is this one big beast, and so the US government has the power to spy. That's not true. The NSA may have tools, But that doesn't mean that the local police have those tools too. That doesn't mean that the FBI, in all parts of the FBI, have those tools as well. And so the NSA might be able to listen to every Skype call and might be able to hack into everyone's computer, but that doesn't mean that the local police have the ability to get encrypted Skype communications or have the ability to hack into cell phones to steal information. And probably what we're going to see is a call to give local police the same level of access that the NSA already enjoys. All right, so the backdoor thing isn't really working right now, right? They're not able to convince Congress to give them these expanded powers. The companies, although they're willing to provide some assistance, may not be providing all the assistance that they want. And so law enforcement agencies have to go out and get it for themselves. And so the response has also been to use hacking technology. I don't know how many of you went and saw the excellent talk that was just 45 minutes ago by Claudio and Morgan on government hacking, but those two have really led our community in exposing the use of hacking technology by governments around the world. The two biggest players in the commercial hack or commercial malware market are the German company called FinFisher and an Italian company called Hacking Team. I'm not going to go into the details of this stuff too much because those two individuals have done such spectacular research on it. But I will just show you one cute thing about this. So this is Martin Monk, who is the CEO or managing director, I guess, of he was Gamma and now FinFisher. I guess is he a big player in the German security scene? I know that he created Backtrack, the Linux security distribution. So this is my favorite photo of Martin. He was profiled by Bloomberg last year. And the reason this is my favorite profile is it shows him with his laptop. And I'm just going to zoom in. I'm going to enhance the image here. And you can see that he has a little sticker over his webcam. So he clearly knows what his own products can do. So Gamma's software has been used and sold to a bunch of really nasty governments around the world. This is the marketing literature for an Italian company called Hacking Team. Their stuff has also been widely used. This is just some of the information from the marketing literature. Defeat encryption, total control over your targets, thousands of encrypted communications per day, get them in the clear. So this software is being sold as a solution to the problem of encryption. Right? If people were not using encrypted communications, I don't think we would see governments rushing out to buy these things. I'm not saying this is good or bad, although I personally am not a huge fan of this industry. But I think we should understand that the reason that governments are now rushing to buy this is because they're worried about encryption. They're worried that they're not able to tap all of the calls and all of the emails and all of the messages. So Hacking Team opened a US office last year in Annapolis, Maryland, which is about 100 miles, maybe less, from Washington, DC. They have spoken, both Hacking Team and Gamma have spoken at some of the largest surveillance trade shows in the United States. This is ISS World, which is commonly nicknamed the Wiretapper's Ball. And they even spoke, the Hacking Team also spoke and exhibited at the Association of Law Enforcement Intelligence Units conference in Chicago this summer. Not only were they on a panel talking about their products, but Hacking Team also sponsored the coffee break in the afternoon. So I don't have the documents here that I can say, you know, I haven't caught these companies red-handed. I cannot stand up here and say that they've sold their technology to local police in the United States. I think that their market in the United States, if they are successful, will be local and state law enforcement agencies. But I cannot tell you that they've sold their technology in the United States because no one's caught them yet. But what I can tell you is if they haven't sold it to law enforcement yet, it's not because they're not trying really hard. They've been showing up at conferences for several years. I think they will be successful at some point. Okay, so what about the feds? The software that Gamma and Hacking Team make, this is really, this is not exclusive technology. You'll find that, you know, the government of Bahrain will be using the same hacking software as the government, the local police in Germany. And that doesn't really work for the FBI. The FBI wants a custom exclusive tool that no one else is using, that antivirus companies haven't been able to analyze. They want something unique. And they're willing to pay a premium for that, whereas local and state law enforcement agencies that have smaller budgets, they'll buy the off-the-shelf hacking software from these surveillance companies. So I've spent about a year trying to figure out what the FBI has been doing. And most of my research happened through LinkedIn. I'm not going to show you all the details here, but basically, I figured out the name of the team at the FBI that does their hacking. They have a dedicated team called the Remote Operations Unit, and all they do is deploy malware to the targets. And I searched LinkedIn profiles using that term, and I found a bunch of former contractors who worked there, and that revealed the existence of the team and also some of the stuff that they do. I gave that information to the Wall Street Journal this summer, and they published a bunch of information. But before I describe that, let me just also say that this isn't really a secret. The FBI has sort of admitted the fact that they're doing this. This is Valerie Caproni, their general counsel back in 2011. Quote, "There will always be very sophisticated criminals that are virtually impossible to intercept through traditional means. The government understands that it must develop individually tailored solutions for those sorts of targets." Now, she didn't say the word hacking, she didn't say malware, she didn't say webcam, but this is what she means. When Caproni talked about individually tailored solutions, what she meant was that they were going to use malware for targets who they couldn't otherwise reach. And it just took us a little while to figure out what they were doing. So the Wall Street Journal, based on some of my research and some research they then also did, was able to pin the FBI down and get a confirmation on the record that the FBI can remotely activate the microphones in telephones and in laptops without the user knowing. Then just a couple weeks ago, the Washington Post did a follow-up revealing, quote, that the FBI has been able to covertly activate a computer's camera without triggering the light that lets the user know it's recording for several years. I personally think this is terrifying. I think it's terrifying that the government has this capability. I think it's terrifying that law enforcement agencies have known that our webcam lights are not reliable and haven't told us, because of course they're not the only ones doing this. There are other governments that have this capability. There are criminals who could have this capability. And so I think it's slightly scary that we have slipped into a world where the government is hacking into the computers of domestic targets without having an informed debate about it first. There have been no public congressional hearings about the use of hacking by law enforcement. This is something that just happened. There's been no explicit legislation that has been passed empowering this. They are using the existing authority they have to search people's homes or search their cars. It's the same kind of warrant that they get to search a house that they're now using to hack into a laptop and install this malware. Now there is a silver lining, at least for this community. The Wall Street Journal also revealed that the FBI doesn't really like to use these tools when investigating hackers because they're worried that their tools will be discovered and then won't be useful anymore. So I guess congratulations, you're safe. I mean, it's funny, I guess, haha. But the sad thing is, this is actually happening. The government really is doing this, and they have a dedicated team. It's mainly contractors who are providing the technology, and then FBI agents who are supervising it. Whether or not you think this is a good thing or a bad thing, whether or not you think that, you know, maybe you think that there are people who are so bad and so evil and are such a big threat to our society that the government should have these tools, even if you think that, we should at least have an informed public debate. Our elected politicians should go on the record and say that they wish for these powers to be used, they wish to fund the acquisition of these tools, but that hasn't happened. No one who is politically accountable has actually embraced this, and instead it's happened behind closed doors. Okay, so we have the use of crypto, slowly. We have the government trying to force companies to modify their products and not having so much success unless it's through bribes. We have the acquisition and use of hacking technology by law enforcement agencies. Is that enough? Well, probably not. The US government will not rest. They want to be able to access every telephone call, every email, every instant message. And if there is one email that is out of their reach, that will be enough for them to seek additional authority. And the problem that they're having is that finally there are some tools and services that are coming online that actually do deliver end-to-end encryption to users. Finally, independent researchers and some small companies are delivering services that are designed to deliver end-to-end encrypted communications to users. And these are seen as a massive and significant threat to the government's ability to intercept communications. So for years, many people thought that Skype was one of those services. Skype had proudly advertised its encryption, its end-to-end encryption. They had hired an independent security researcher to conduct a study of the service, and they put their report proudly on their website. Whenever people asked Skype about interception, their response always was, you know, we have built end-to-end encryption with keys that we don't know into our products, blah, 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 blah. And so I think many people were surprised when we learned this summer that the NSA and the FBI had been able to get access to Skype communications. I think many people were very surprised when we learned that Skype had been served with a directive to comply by the Attorney General and that the company had modified their service to enable surreptitious wiretapping by the US government. Skype wasn't perfect, obviously. There are many flaws in both the technology, but actually at a policy level, it was closed source. We couldn't see what was happening. And even though there had been an audit of the technology originally, it had of course changed many times over the years. But I think many of us were surprised that a company that had advertised itself as being private had been able to be forced to modify its product to be less private, in fact, to permit this covert surveillance. After the Guardian story broke, Brad Smith, the general counsel of Microsoft, released a public statement on the Microsoft blog, and he said, quote, "As internet-based voice and video communications increase, it is clear that governments will have an interest in using or establishing legal powers to secure access to this kind of content to investigate crimes or to tackle terrorism." He added, "We therefore assume that all calls, whether over the internet or by fixed or mobile phone, will offer similar levels of privacy and security." Now, those of you who've been coming to this conference for years probably know that there is zero privacy or security in cell phone calls and landline calls. And so I think this is Brad Smith's way of telling us to expect similarly nothing from Skype. But look, Microsoft paid an awful lot of money for Skype. This is a service that has a huge number of users. Many of us, I think, probably still have Skype on our handsets, and it's now embedded within various other Microsoft products. And I think it should be troubling that this top executive at this company has basically said, don't rely on us for any kind of security. Don't expect that we will deliver end-to-end encrypted communications. Don't expect that we will keep your calls safe from the government. They just said, don't worry, we haven't provided the government with bulk access. We just, you know, the government still has to come through us. But Microsoft isn't the only game in town. In fact, there are other companies who are trying to do something different. Silent Circle is one of these companies. It's a small firm. Created by Phil Zimmerman, the original creator of PGP. And they have, you know, they're one of, I think, a handful of companies at this point who are trying to deliver products that are truly end-to-end encrypted. And they've said, we have no backdoors. They've actually said, in addition to that, that if they were forced to build in a backdoor, they would shut down the company and move somewhere else. And so you could imagine that a company like Silent Circle is going to ruffle a few feathers at the FBI. Similarly, SpiderOak, which is a commercial operator of encrypted backup services, they say that they've created a system that makes it impossible for us to reveal your data to anyone. They want to provide a service to their customers, they want to provide a reliable backup service, and they don't want to know what you're doing. They just want to make sure that it works, that it's reliable, that your data is safe, but they don't want to be in the business of receiving law enforcement requests. And these are just two companies from a growing industry of firms that want to deliver products to people who care about their privacy and are willing to pay for it. And I'm actually really delighted that these companies exist. I have no financial relationship with any of these firms. This is not an advertising session. I just bring them up as an example because these are the kinds of companies that you might imagine law enforcement agencies are not terribly happy about. So Lavabit was sort of one of these companies. Although their products were not designed to be as secure as they might have advertised. And Ladar Levinson, the creator of the company, I think learned the hard way that companies like his are now seen as a threat to the government. This summer, he received this subpoena from the Eastern District Court of Virginia. I'm just going to read you a quick selection from this. Quote, you are directed to bring the grand jury the public and private encryption keys used by Lavabit.com in any SSL or TLS session, including HTTPS sessions with clients using the Lavabit.com website. This is the first that we know of this kind of order, although probably this is not the first that has ever occurred. And this is really a new world. It is really, it's one thing for the government to go to a technology company and say, you have some stored data about your users, you have some emails or some text messages on your systems, give us a copy of those text messages. It's another thing entirely for the government to go to a technology company and to say, give us your encryption keys that are used to protect all of your users' information. It's another thing to say, we want to install a DPI device in your network that will grab every single user's information, and don't worry, just trust us, we're only gonna look at one person's information once we scan everyone's, which is in fact what the FBI ultimately wanted to do. Now, Lavabit has appealed the decision of the court in this case. They ultimately destroyed the encryption key and then shut down the company, they handed over the encryption key in 4-point font and then shut down the company. But this is I think, the first public example we have, and I suspect that we will have others at some point down the road. So this is Valerie Caproni, again, our friend at the FBI. Quote, no one should be promising their customers that they will thumb their nose at a US court order. They can promise strong encryption. They just need to figure out how they can provide us with plain text. All right, so again, it's really funny, but this is the top FBI lawyer telling you this. And in fact, that's what they told Lavabit. They said, by all means, you know, say what you want on your website, but we want a way to get your customers' data. And so this is the world we now live in. We now live in a world where the US government, and likely other governments, will go to companies and demand whatever it takes to get their customers' data. This is a scary world, and it's a world we're going to have to adapt to. And as technologists, we have to design with this threat model in mind. The threat model is one in which the government essentially has pseudo power over any company. And so we have to build our products to be resistant to this level of coercive power. That doesn't mean that the government gets everything it wants, but it means as engineers that we have to design our products and our technologies ahead of time to withstand this amount of coercion. Now, Lavabit's design wasn't sufficient. I think that's pretty clear now. But there are technologies and products that could, in fact, withstand this amount of coercion. But we need to take a look at everything that we're doing and everything we're using, and ask ourselves if we actually trust this piece of software or the design of this piece of technology. For example, many people who are using app stores from either Apple or Google have essentially given these companies the ability to push software down to our handsets without our knowledge or control. You can try this for yourself if you're using the Android operating system. Log into the Google Play Store through your web browser on your computer, and install an app, and it will show up on your phone without asking for any prompt. Google has the ability to push code down to your phone. Well, what happens when the FBI or the NSA go to Google and ask them to deliver an update to a particular user? Well, we don't know. Right now, the only thing protecting us is Google's legal team, and it would be very nice if Google's technical team could protect us from those kinds of threats, too. To close, this isn't all bad news. It's mostly bad news. But it isn't all bad news. To conclude, we really need to take these governments seriously. They want to get our data, and it's our job to keep them out. Thank you very much.